Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. We are eager to offer amazingly competitive prices, plus an additional $1,000 Costco discount on all new Cherry Hill Volvos. When leasing or purchasing a new or certified Cherry Hill Volvo, you become a valued part of our team. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
WOGL HD3, Philadelphia, from the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will be broadcast.
This is the next generation of talk. Now, on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Rich Zeoli.
Senator Rand Paul confronts the CEO of Moderna on the risk of myocarditis in healthy young people. That's right. And he also goes after Fauci on the origins of COVID. This comes as Governor Ron DeSantis says Trump should have fired Asanto Fauci. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 is the number on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli. So I got a big show lined up for you for the rest of the day today. There is so much to get to, and we're excited about that fact, too, because we have Victoria Coates joining us at 440 about the new world order between China and Russia. And we also have our buddy, Professor Wilfred Riley. But the House Oversight Committee is now investigating Biden's mishandling of the baby formula shortage. This makes me very, very happy. The House Oversight and Accountability Committee, Chairman James Comer, they are now setting their sights on the Biden administration's handling of the baby formula shortage of 2022. Good. I'll tell you why. Because the FDA is a disgrace. The Food and Drug Administration in this country is one of the most political organizations where every single person there exists for one purpose: to try to get a job in big pharma. And as far as I'm concerned, shut it the hell down, because it does nothing and accomplishes nothing. The FDA did not take any real accountability for the mishandling of the crisis. They sent a letter to the FDA commissioner, Dr. Robert Califf, requesting all kinds of information. They said the Committee on Oversight and Accountability is continuing its investigation into the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's response to the infant formula shortage and its restructuring of the Food and Nutrition Division in response to the infant formula shortage. The Reagan-Udall Foundation's report titled Operational Evaluation of the FDA Human Foods Program found that there was little motivation and no requirement to facilitate critical thinking and proactive decision making during the infant formula shortage. Well, let's face it, most bureaucrats have no critical thinking skills and have no idea how to be proactive. That's why they work in government. Not everybody who works in government is like that, but most bureaucrats are like that. Despite this report and the acknowledged need for a major overhaul, they said you stated there would be no reassignment nor firings over the administration's response to the infant formula shortage, they said to the FDA commissioner. Well, it's just nobody gets in trouble in government. Nobody. I mean, you could be part of the FBI spying on Americans. You could be engaged in censorship of Americans. Nothing happens to you. The bureaucracy circles its wagons and protects itself and protects each other. Now, Chairman Comer blasted the FDA for shuffling around the Food Safety and Nutrition Division instead of firing or reassigning the employees who mishandled the crisis or taking any kind of accountability. They said as the administration scrambled to contain the issue, families across the nation were presented with the question of how they would feed the infants in their families and communities. Now, instead of removing or reassigning the individuals at fault for the poor response to the crisis, the announced restructuring of the Food and Nutrition Division simply requires certain offices and personnel to report to the newly created position of Deputy Commissioner for Human Foods. So they just create another position. They just add another bureaucratic person to the mix. create a new person, the deputy commissioner for human foods. So they have a lot of questions. And I'll tell you something. This was a scary time for lots of families in this country. Not every family is able to breastfeed, as you know, particularly families who adopt children. I mean, we had two children. We couldn't breastfeed them. And in Patrick's case, too, it was particularly tough because we didn't realize until several months that he had a milk protein intolerance. We had to ultimately go with a special formula called Neocate. That was a prescription formula. This was after we went through, I mean, everything under the sun. I remember as a Christmas morning driving an hour to try to find him organic milk formula. And we tried goat. We tried everything. Nutramigen, which smelled like cat food, everything. But it was only till we found Neocate, which was an amino acid-based formula, that my son had any relief. But for a lot of families, particularly those with who had problems with mass marketed formula, specialty formula was especially hard to find during that crisis. So it was a real problem for millions of children in this country, potentially. And what they want to know is between the White House and the FDA and the Department of Health and Human Services, they want to know about who messed up here and is anyone going to do anything about it? Is anybody get fired? Nobody in government is ever held accountable for anything. You remember this began in early news began in early 2022. President Biden said he became aware of the shortage since early April. HHS Secretary Xavier Becerra said the administration had known about it since 2021, but no one in the administration publicly addressed it until May of 2022. So we had to start importing formula from foreign countries, which is fine and something I'm okay with, but it took them about a year until they started doing that. But it's not over yet. Families are still feeling the effects of the shortage nearly a year after it began. According to a report from The Guardian earlier this month, shelves are still empty in some areas. Certain brands are out of stock completely. Certain brands are limited. Companies that make formula are facing scrutiny from federal regulators and investigators because that's the other thing that happens too, is then the bureaucrats, if there's any heat on them, they scurry like cockroaches and then they start busting chops to try to justify their jobs. And the reason where the original plant was shut down over this bacteria, none of that bacteria was ever found in any actual formula. So it was the kind of thing that really probably could have been resolved in, I don't know, a weekend. But because governments like that, it drags its feet. This thing lasted for over a year, and it was a disaster. And again, the question that the Oversight Committee has is anyone going to get in trouble for this? Anyone? Senator Rand Paul confronted the CEO of Moderna over the issue of myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the lining of the heart, and it's a real problem, and it's causing a lot of young healthy men to drop dead of heart attacks, particularly athletes. We've seen this happening right now. They won't tell us why, of course, but we know the reason why. And other countries around the world stopped giving out Moderna and Pfizer shots over this issue in young people. And that's some of the reasons why some countries around the world have stopped even suggesting that or even allowing kids, little kids, to get shots because of this issue of the heart inflammation. This is Moderna CEO Stefan Bancel, cut six.
Mr. Bancel, Moderna recently paid NIH $400 million. Do you believe it creates a conflict of interest for the government employees who are making money now off of the vaccine to also be dictating the policy about how many times we have to take the vaccine?
Good morning, Senator. Indeed, we recently made, before Christmas last year, a $400 million payment to the NIH for an old patent that they had developed, not related to COVID, but useful in the development of a COVID vaccine to pay them for their work. It's for the U.S. government to assess how that money should be used.
Do you think it creates a conflict of interest for the same people deciding the policy of how often we have to take the vaccine to also be making money the more times we take the vaccine? Yes or no?
This is for the government to decide, Senator.
You have no opinion on whether or not it creates a conflict of interest. Is there a higher interest or a higher incidence of myocarditis among adolescent males 16 to 24 after taking your vaccine?
So thank you for the question, Senator. First, let me say we care deeply about safety and we're working closely with the CDC and the FDA to
get... Pretty much a yes or no. Is there a higher incidence of myocarditis among boys 16 to 24 after they take your vaccine?
the data have shown, actually, I've seen, sorry, from the CDC, actually shown that there's less myocarditis for people who get the vaccine versus who get COVID infection.
You're saying that for ages 16 to 24 among males who take the COVID vaccine, their risk of myocarditis is less than people who get the disease?
That is my understanding,
sir. That is not true, and I'd like to enter into the record 6 peer-reviewed papers from the Journal of Vaccine, the Annals of Medicine, that say the complete opposite of what you say. I also spoke with your president just last week, and he readily acknowledged in private that, yes, there is an increased risk of myocarditis. The fact that you can't say it in public is quite disturbing. Do you think it's scientifically sound to mandate 3 vaccines for adolescent boys?
This is for the public health leaders to decide, Senator.
You've been advocating for it. You've been interviewed, and you've been advocating for boosters. Do you know when the myocarditis is most common among these adolescent boys after the second dose? When I spoke with your president, he readily acknowledged in private, yeah, that maybe there ought to be a discussion whether we ought to have 1 vaccine versus 2 versus 3. If 90% of the myocarditis comes after the second dose, why don't we have a rational discussion about 1? Marty McCary, a physician from Johns Hopkins, has said exactly the same thing. It's been discussed, and yet we have this ridiculous notion from the CDC. So the CDC says, and I'll ask you this question. Let's start it as a question. Your 16-year-old's had COVID. Your 16-year-old gets better and now has recovered from COVID. You vaccinate them and they get myocarditis. Are you going to give them 2 more vaccines? Your child, give them 2 more vaccines?
I'm not a clinician. I will have to discuss.
You have children.
I do.
Have you vaccinated your children?
I have.
How many times?
3 or 4 times.
3 or 4 times. So the CDC recommends this, and, you know, you're obviously someone who's self-interested in the outcome here. But the CDC says that if your 15, 16-year-old gets COVID, recovers, takes a vaccine and gets myocarditis, is hospitalized with elevated heart enzymes, and is very sick, the CDC says as soon as he gets better, vaccinate him again. You know how many American parents think that that's a rational, reasonable thing to do? Do you know how many countries don't do this for children? Sweden doesn't offer the vaccine for kids under 12 unless they're at risk for severe disease. And I agree with that. I'm not saying never on any of this. I think it's a very reasonable position to say kids at risk or have some diseases that there may be a reason for vaccinating some children. Finland doesn't recommend it for under 12 months. Norway also. England as well. France, Poland, Germany, Switzerland, and all vaccinate 12 and up. So we got half the world who have looked at these studies. There's a study in Israel of thousands of patients, and yet you sit here and act as if you've never heard of myocarditis, and you don't think it's an increased risk for young adolescent males, when all of the studies who isolate out people by age have found that, yes, there's an increased risk after taking your vaccine. Pfizer, too, but worse with Moderna.
Now, let's stop it right there for a second here. This is the point I make about the FDA. How is it the United States Food and Drug Administration is not saying what Senator Dr. Rand Paul is saying right now? If all these other nations around the world are saying this, how is it that America's not? And you know the answer. The answer lies in our Food and Drug Administration. It's the revolving door. And the show Dope Sick did a very good job of highlighting this, the Hulu show Dope Sick, because so many of these people, they work in the bureaucracy and they don't make a lot of money, but they can when they leave, and they can go work for Big Pharma and cash in. I'm not trying to trash Big Pharma. I'm just saying that there should not be this revolving door among people that are supposed to be the regulators, excuse me, and then they go in and they cash in, because then they're not going to do what their job requires them to do, which is to actually have oversight. All these other countries around the world have pointed this out, and the United States still doesn't even acknowledge this. I mean, come on here, you know? And as a dad, I want to know this stuff. I think every parent wants to know this stuff. I think we have a responsibility to know this kind of stuff. But if we don't have the pharmacy, look, the CEO of Moderna is going to sit there. He's not going to say it. He's like, I'm not a clinician, Senator. I am not a clinician. And freaking Pepe Le Pew over there, he's not going to say a word about this. So if the FDA doesn't, then what do we do? Who does then? Who looks out for us? And if you say anything about it on social media, you know, you're a tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist who doesn't like science. Well, what about all these other countries around the world? Are they just a bunch the countries and their health departments? Are they just a bunch of tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists? Or maybe there's something to this. All right, let's keep going.
People by age have found that, yes, there's an increased risk after taking your vaccine. Pfizer, too, but worse with Moderna.
Oh, there's an increased risk, Senator. I was comparing it to somebody who gets COVID.
Well, that's also not true either. But there's an increased risk of getting it. But even when they compare it to the disease, there are many papers out there that do show that there's more of a risk of myocarditis after vaccination. So you have to weigh the risk and balances. And you are right, you're going to make less money because you're going to try, and they're already trying. The CDC's got it on their schedule. They're going to try to force all the kids in America to do this through school. But guess what? Parents aren't going to do it. They've seen that COVID is not deadly in children, and you're right. It's become less deadly over time. Your market's going down, so you aren't going to make as much money. I'm all for you making money in an honest way, but I don't like the idea that the people making the decisions in government are also receiving money and are now conflicted in their interest.
And that's it. And if they're not receiving money and conflicting in their interests, the potential for them to make money down the road will absolutely conflict them. The CEO of Moderna today took it from both sides, too. Even Bernie Sanders teed off against Big Pharma today, yelling about how much money that they're making, which Bernie often does. But remember, Bernie supported vaccine mandates. So Bernie's a gigantic hypocrite on this. And I need to point that out to you because this is exactly the frustration that I have with guys like Bernie Sanders. It's one thing to come out and to trash Big Pharma about making all this money over the COVID shots. But it's another thing if you mandate that people have to take the COVID shot, because how the hell can you square those two things? And that's what Bernie did. He shredded this is the title here from our friends over at Grabian. Bernie Sanders shreds Moderna CEO's excuse for vaccine price hike. You guys became billionaires. That doesn't seem too complex to me. The United States government helped you develop that vaccine, Bernie said. Bernie, you helped them become billionaires by mandating the jab. You helped them do it. And now you're yelling at them because of all the money they made. Why do you think they made all the money, Bernie? They made all the money because guys like you forced people to take it if they didn't want to take it. And let's not forget something, too. All right. We have known this was a problem in young people ever since the CDC and the FDA came out and said, oh, this is perfectly safe. And I remember the time that when they made the announcement, I had Dr. Nicole Sapphire on the show. And I love Dr. Sapphire. She's fantastic. And I remember talking to her. She's a mom. I'm a dad. And we talk to each other. And we don't have the same children. I should just point that out for the record. Different. She's not mom and dad together. But I'm just saying that she is a parent. I'm a parent. And I remember asking her. And she said, look, we have to look to what Israel's doing. We have to look at what Sweden's doing. We have to look at these countries around the world. And we have to ask a lot of questions here. And at the time, it was even as simple as maybe we separate the doses longer than what the United States is recommending. Maybe it's only one dose. Maybe it's none at all because of myocarditis. But these are the questions that need to be asked. And instead, our phony, fake regulators who only want to just cash in on Big Pharma, because let's face it, they made billions of dollars and there's a lot of money to pay people to work for them, particularly people who can then help them navigate the fake regulatory process of the FDA and the CDC. CDC. I mean, who better for Big Pharma to hire than somebody who was a vice president of regulatory compliance at the United States Food and Drug Administration? And that's exactly what happened. You know, when the opioid crisis was going on and back in the day when Purdue Pharma was out there making all this money off of the opioids and everything else and the Sackler family and everything, they were turning around and they were hiring. They were hiring the people at the FDA and the CDC who were turning around and saying, everything is fine. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. It's all good. It's all good. And look, if I was working there and I was working in the FDA or the CDC and I know I can go cash in, why would I bust the chops of these companies? They're going to get the approvals anyway. Why would I stand in their way? I mean, I stand in my way because I try to do a good job in life, but there's too much money to be made. So then Bernie goes out there and screams about how much money they make. But Bernie, you help them make it. You help them make it. And then with that money, they turn around and hire the people who can help them get through the regulatory processes. At the same time, guys like you were literally saying to people, you should lose your job, not be able to go out to dinner, not be able to serve in the military, not be able to work in healthcare if you did not get a Pfizer or Moderna shot. Like, give me a break. Here's a little bit of Bernie Sanders. Take a listen.
It was announced that the federal government put money into Moderna. You became, the stock boxes soared. You became a multi-billionaire overnight. So it's hard for me not to believe that the federal government played a major role in the development of this drug. But here is the main point. I don't want to talk about what happened 3 years ago. We're here today. You're a multi-billionaire. Are the people, top executives on your company are multi-billionaires, all developed as a result of the vaccine. And now we have a situation where you are proposing to quadruple the price of the new, of the vaccine once the government stockpile runs out. That will mean that not only, and we'll talk about later on the patient assistance program, but in terms of government, in terms of Medicare, Medicaid, other government agencies, taxpayers are going to have to spend substantially more money. My question to you is, given the fact that you have made billions of dollars, that your company has made huge profits on behalf of the taxpayers of this country, will you reconsider your decision to quadruple the price of the vaccine?
No.
So, Chairman Sanders, what we have to do is to deal with the complexity I described, and I'm happy to go into more detail through this hearing. This is not the same product. We used to have 10 doses in each vial. Now we're going to have every vial will have a different dose. This is not the same.
I understand it, but quadrupling the price is huge, and I would hope very much that you will reconsider that decision. It's going to cost the taxpayers of this country billions of dollars.
So what? Who cares? Why does it
matter?
That's
something you can
do. Bernie, the question you should be asking them is, is this necessary? Why don't you ask that question? Because you see, you don't care. You only care about the price they're charging the government. You don't care about whether or not people should be actually getting 4, 5, 6 seasonal boosters and boosters twice a year, and young people should be getting them, and kids should be getting them, and kids going to school should be getting them. How do you think they're making all this money, Bernie? How do you think they're making all the money? Why don't you focus on that? Oh, it's infuriating. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Listen. It's Madness Month, and I do love the month of March for so many reasons. Madness being one of them, of course. But I'll tell you what is really mad and infuriating is the cost of heat and soon cool your home. And I know I was there. You know, our home was built in the 1960s, so it's older and it has pretty crappy insulation. Well, it did, anyway. And we used to feel the walls in the winter, and the walls were freezing cold. Or in the summertime, house was always hot. The air conditioner was pumping. And it was pretty new, and the furnace was brand new. But it turned out it was the insulation. So here's what you do. Call my friends at USA Insulation and give them a call today. Because you will get your home insulated and have that energy upgrade with no payments and no interest for a year. Plus, there is a government tax credit that gives you back $1,200 of the insulation cost. $1,200. So what are you waiting for? Do it today. You'll start getting the savings right now off of your energy bill, and you'll also have no payments and no interest for a year. And then eventually this pays for itself with the energy savings that you get off your electric bill. It's great. Just reach out to them today at 1-800-USA-FOAM, 1-800-USA-FOAM, or usainsulation.net, usainsulation.net. They'll do a great job for you. You will save money. Your house will be way more comfortable, and no payments or interest for a year. usainsulation.net.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
The Zeoli Show on your schedule from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
Hey, does anybody know where Senator John Fetter person is? Anyone? Anyone seen him? Has anyone seen the guy? Is he alive? Where is he? The United States Senator for Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, Fetter person. I try to leave gender out of it, be gender neutral. John Fetter person. Where the hell is this guy? And you know, I have this theory. I've had this theory for a long time that his wife is actually the senator. I mean, remember the Joe Biden slip that time, and he said Giselle's going to be a great member of the Senate, or something stupid that he said, because Biden always says something stupid. Do you remember that? And Giselle's always the one who, I mean, let's face it, she wanted her husband to become the senator. Let's be very honest here. If I had had a stroke and I was doing so badly and my wife kept pushing me on the campaign trail, running in a big state like Pennsylvania, up and down from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia and everywhere in between, east and west and north and south, day after day of the grueling campaign trail. I mean, you'd turn around and be like, yo, do you love me or not? You're trying to kill me here. But it was all about the power. It was all about the cause. And I'm telling you, when, not if, but when John Fetterperson can finally not do this job, I mean, he can't now, but when they acknowledge this publicly, after whatever deadline they have to get through before they have to have a special election this year, which will buy them time, is what they want. They want a special election next year. They want to have it on the ballot for the presidential, if they can swing it that way. She'll probably be who Governor Josh Shapiro appoints. Oh, it'll be so historic, right? A woman United States senator and the wife of John Fetterperson, and she'll be so good, and she's such a wacko lefty, and she's all right with the causes. I mean, left with the causes, but you know what I mean. It'd be perfect. Hey, but, oh, you know, and I hate to take this away from my husband, but he's just in rough shape, you know? I mean, we got to hope, he has to heal. And so on The Hill, thehill.com, they actually had Gisele Fetterperson on, and they asked her a question in terms of immigration. And I love the phrasing of this here. It's almost like they know, like they get the joke. Take a listen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, going forward in terms of immigration, you know, is there any piece of legislation or any initiative that you're looking at in particular into, you know, how the situation is handled? We've seen that immigration has become a bit of a political football, if you will, with Republicans using it to attack the president, you know, at the situation at the southern border. So, you know, what are you looking forward to seeing being done on this issue?
Well, since I'm not, you know, a legislator, mm-hmm. I'm always going to be an advocate, and I will look at what will, I think, be best for our country and for everyone. So I think there's different pieces out there, and I will continue to support those that I believe would get us closer to something that I think we deserve to see for America, right? We look at the labor market. We know how much is struggling. We know that immigrants can make a big difference in so many ways and are a great contribution. But for me, I always felt so American. I knew that I was American, and the only thing that was missing for me was a piece of paper.
The only thing missing from you right now is the title of senator. I love what she goes, I'm not a legislator, but I do play one since my husband can't. There's no doubt in my mind about that right there. 855-839-1210 if you want to weigh in on everything we are discussing today. So there's going to be a lot, too, of fallout from this Moderna CEO. I've been reading some more things about it. As we get more audio, we'll play it for you. Obviously, I don't know if it'll be today or not, but I'm sure there'll be more tomorrow, because the guy was just getting killed by both sides today. It was actually kind of fun to watch. I didn't watch it, but I'm reading about it now, and it seems like the guy was just getting beat up left and right, which is good. So we're going to talk to Victoria Coates in just a couple minutes, of course, one of my favorite Philly girls, about the state of our world. She's an expert in foreign policy stuff. As China, Putin, and Xi come together to talk and break bread and shake hands and give each other bro hugs and everything like this. But I tell you, Democrats love World War III. They're all in on it. They really are. We have a little supercut from our friends over at Grabian, just in case you're wondering when this will ever end. Remember, the United States of America says we reject a ceasefire. Russia says they reject a ceasefire. The only person who wants a ceasefire apparently is China, although I don't believe that, but because I don't know if that's true or not, but Xi Jinping wants to pretend like he's a peacemaker. But we don't, the ceasefire is not even acceptable for us, because it's all about getting back the land that Russia took. So this thing is never going to end, ever. Here's a little montage of the Democrats just loving endless wars, particularly this one. Take a listen.
It's worth fighting for as long as it takes. And that's how long we're going to be with you, Mr. President, for as long as it takes.
We'll do it.
Thank you.
Well, we were on the brink of World War III because Donald Trump took the worst possible option given to him in a slideshow.
In this country, we have begun to overestimate the dangers of impeachment and underestimate the dangers of a deranged president retaining control over a nuclear hyperpower.
We cannot wait around while Donald Trump is in control of the nuclear weapon.
Your objection to potentially going into World War III cannot be procedural.
The biggest danger of the Trump presidency is that we are always just a Trump whim away from nuclear war.
They say it's World War III, but I'm looking out my window. It's very quiet in those smoking craters out there.
Has to be told that it's his job to avoid World War III.
One Democratic congressman sent me a note this evening and say this president wants this war.
A future administration needs to find a way to put an end to the forever wars.
We're in new normal, and the new normal is forever war.
But there's a big difference between ending the forever wars, which he wants to do responsibly, and what seems to be President Trump's rather itchy Twitter finger.
The objective needs to be to end the forever wars.
If Congress does not want to go to war, now is the time to start putting restraints on this president. And again, they've been giving him green lights all the way.
Maybe it's because we're going to take on the military industrial complex and end endless wars.
Every American needs to wake up to the shenanigans of the military-industrial complex and how much hundreds of billions of dollars are spent only because of short-term profit maximization for military defense contractors as opposed to America's legitimate security needs.
You know, the thing about this, too, is that this was everything prior to Ukraine, right? And that's something. Now the Democrats are all in. For as long as it takes, how much money it takes, whatever it takes. There's literally no end in sight for these people. Because this is their cause. This is the flag they fly. So do not for a second believe anything these people say. They are the party of war hawks. They are. They always have been. They always will be. You know, they hated Trump and they told everybody he was going to get us into World War III. He didn't. He didn't start any new wars. And that's part of the reason why they wanted to get rid of him. And then they get in power, and then Ukraine, whatever you need, blank check, whatever you need, ammunition, guns, tanks, soon planes, for as long as it takes. This is literally going to be an endless war. And the very same people that spent years lecturing us are the ones delivering it, because the Democrats are the party of war. That's it, bottom line. And a lot of Republicans, too, but you cannot doubt the fact that the Democrat Party is the party of endless wars. Not now, not after what we're seeing with Ukraine. They're not even asking questions. They don't even ask questions about any of this stuff. 855-839-1210. So what does it mean, this new alliance between China and Russia? And what do we have to worry about with all this? We're going to find out with our buddy, Dr. Victoria Coates. But listen, 40 days up to 40 pounds. Just say it with me. 40 days to lose 40 pounds with spring around the corner. It's time to schedule your consult with NJ Diet. It only takes 40 days to lose a contractually guaranteed 20 to 40 plus pounds. Their guaranteed program uses your hair, saliva, and blood work to personalized supplements that will target your hormonal imbalances, and that gets your body into the fat burning zone so you can naturally shed the weight. Then NJ Diet uses DNA info to help you keep it off. If you're not sure you can do it alone, well, NJ Diet is with you every step of the way. You even get the doctor's personal email and phone number. So get guaranteed weight loss of 20 to 40 plus pounds without any shots. Listen, there's no feeling of hunger, no hormones, no surgery. So what are you waiting for? Schedule your consultation now. Locations are close by in Newark, Delaware, King of Prussia, and Cherry Hill, or worldwide with live online video consultations. Just call them at 855-5NJ-DIET. 855-5NJ-DIET or NJDIET.com and lose the weight for good.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
It is Wednesday. It is hump day. Happy hump day as we get through the week. Very, very excited to be with you, of course. And a lot to talk about on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. So the question, of course, is what does this new alliance between Xi and Putin mean to the world, the state of the world, the state of the world as we know it? Well, whenever I have questions like this, there's only one woman I turn to for answers. on this issue anyway. Dr. Victoria Coates, former Deputy National Security Advisor and Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and of course, a Philly girl. Dr. Coates, how are you today?
I am well, Rich. How are you holding up?
Well, I'm holding up. Week's almost over, which is good.
Indeed.
It's been a barn burner of a week, as you might think, Dr. Coates. There's been quite a stuff to talk about, you know.
Well, there is a great deal to talk about, Rich. First and foremost, I think we need to talk about Trey Turner and the great gift that is coming to Philadelphia and what we got to see from the World Baseball Classic. It's going to be a very exciting summer.
My producer had to come in my ear to tell me that's the new shortstop for the Phillies.
It is. He is our big star, our star signing in the offseason, and he hit a grand slam in one of the games and then homered last night. Unfortunately, the loss to Japan, but the Phillies showed very well. So getting all excited.
So you're a hardcore Phillies fan. You're even watching the spring training games.
Oh, yeah. Usually we are at spring training. It gets worse than that. And we couldn't go this year because of some other travel that I had. But it's one of our favorite things to do, to go down to Clearwater and soak up a little sunshine and see how they're shaping up.
I used to love, back in the day, I would broadcast live from Clearwater. It was so much fun. Now the company's too cheap to send me down there. But I'll tell you, though, back in the day, it was great. And I told my son, Patrick, one of these days, I said, buddy, I'm going to take you down to spring training and just do a guy's weekend out of it, because I do think it's a blast. Plus, it's Florida, you know?
Yeah, it's the free state of Florida. So that's all good stuff. But I suspect you called me to talk about something else.
I did. I wanted to ask you about the Eagles prospects.
Well, we're a little bit upset about CJ, happy about Slay. You know, there's lots going on.
Yeah, yeah. Is Jason Kelce going to stay an Eagle, you think?
He is. He said he's signing for another year. There was an awesome video of him doing tequila shots with Howie to celebrate. So that
All
looks
right.
like it's
well,
a done
then we're
deal.
Good. I guess we have nothing else to chat about.
All right.
Have a great day. Well, while I have you on the phone, I might as well ask you about Russia and China, since you are an expert in foreign policy. I guess I'll ask you about that.
Well, it was a remarkable week for Americans to watch this play out in real time. In a funny way, it reminded me of last month when we were, all staring up at the sky at the spy balloon just drifting over our heads, and the administration doing nothing and having no response. And you think back 50 years to Nixon going to China to create a strategic partnership with China to isolate the then Soviet Union. And that was a really decisive step that eventually, it helped us in winning the Cold War. So, these situations have happened in the past, but it's a lot better when the United States is playing a leadership role rather than just standing by powerless to influence events.
And when Xi and Putin are there and their buddies and they're talking about the new world order, the new global order here, what does that look like from China's perspective, for example?
Well, from China's perspective, it looks awfully good for China. Xi is not in this out of the goodness of his heart. I don't think he particularly cares about Vladimir Putin. I think he cares about the vast natural resources that Russia possesses and is having trouble selling anywhere else. But one of the things that was remarkable about this very ostentatious, state visit, it's not like anybody was trying to hide anything, and the whole thing was basically broadcast live, is Xi does not perceive there being any fallout or any consequences for this. And you have Biden, who spent the last year going on and on about how, he's trying to isolate Putin on the world stage, that anybody who does business with Putin is, going to share his isolation. But clearly Xi thinks that's just a paper tiger talking, and that there won't be any ramifications for this. And, so far, rather like the spy balloon, we haven't seen any.
Yeah. And then I also worry about the potential now for China to take advantage of that and invade Taiwan, because that's obviously on everybody's mind. I don't know what the United States official position on that is under the Biden administration. I really have no idea, but I guess what the Taiwanese leader is going to be coming to Washington soon and having an official visit.
Well, unfortunately, no. The administration somewhat cravenly, in my opinion, came out yesterday and said that when the president of Taiwan visits, she will just be doing what they call transits, so not an official visit, and those will be, I believe, in New York and California. So there will be no official engagements, to my knowledge, in Washington. And I, you know, I think you're absolutely right to be very, very concerned that China is going to make a move on Taiwan. And quite frankly, at this point, given the weakness of the administration, it would not necessarily have to be a military move. You know, they could move very aggressively in economic terms against Taiwan, you know, create a sense that the United States is not firmly behind Taiwan, and so Taiwan better strike a deal, rather like Hong Kong, and we saw how that worked out. So I'm worried that this perception of weakness is going to be, you know, a much more powerful motivating factor than existed 2.5 years ago.
You wrote a piece for National Review, and it's entitled The Iraq Lessons for Ukraine. And you said promoting democracy should not be our basic reason for supporting Kyiv. I agree with you, but give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it was in a way a hard piece for me to write, Rich, because, you know, I experienced Iraq in real time, and I worked for Secretary Rumsfeld, so I'm very familiar with what went into that decision. And, you know, I think it's hard to look back at it as anything but probably a blunder. I know there were elements in the Bush administration that were advocating if additional military action were going to be taken in the Middle East after 9/11, that Iran should be the target. Certainly, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, that looks like a pretty good option compared to what we have, which is an Iran emboldened largely because of U.S. failure in Iraq and how Iran's been able to capitalize on it. And I went back and was looking at it, and, you know, what struck me is President Biden's rhetoric that he's been using to justify the unprecedented degree of military support we're providing to Ukraine in these abstract terms of democracy promotion, that this is a global struggle for freedom. And it sounds to me just like George Bush's second inaugural address, which was delivered in 2005 after it was revealed that there were not stockpiles of WMD in Iraq. And the decision was made to pivot to promoting democracy as a path to peace as the justification for the war. Problem there is then you've got to create the democracy. Democracies do better when they come about organically through the actions of the people who are to participate in the democracy. And when you decide as an outside power you're going to force democracy to justify something that's already happened, you wind up in a real problem. And, you know, I say that as somebody who is an enthusiastic participant in democracy. I wrote a book about the history of democracy. I'm not knocking it in any way. I'm just saying when you are trying to explain to the American people this kind of investment of treasure, and then when we saw with the drone and the Russian jet over the Black Sea, you know, this can potentially drag us into something else. You need to do it in very stark terms, in terms of U.S. national security interests, not in terms, you know, abstract terms like a global struggle for freedom.
Dr. Victoria Coates is with me. She is a senior research fellow concentrating on international affairs and national security at the Heritage Foundation's Thatcher Center for Freedom. Follow her on Twitter at Victoria Coates for not only foreign policy and international relations, but also for great ideas on the Phillies. When Biden says there's a red line, and this is the problem that I have with these guys when they draw these red lines, don't say it if you really don't intend to do anything about it, because I think that just makes us weaker. And he came out, he said, if China helps Russia, that's going to be a red line. Well, China's helping Russia, and there's no consequences. It's very reminiscent of when Obama drew a red line with Syria, too. I think if you really have no intention of doing anything, don't even say it. I equate this to my kids. You know, I've got an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old. If I tell them they're going to be punished and I don't punish them, the next time I tell them they're going to be punished, they don't believe me.
Yeah, it's the best way to encourage bad behavior. And I think, you know, it's yet another unfortunate Biden statement. You know, you said a minute ago, you don't know what the U.S. stance is toward Taiwan. Well, that's because they keep taking different ones. I mean, on the one hand, our stated policy is one of, this is Diplo speak, but deliberate ambiguity, that we're not going to advocate for or against the Chinese one China policy. But then Biden has come out two or three times and said that, yes, indeed, we will militarily intervene to defend Taiwan. And then, you know, Blinken or some other poor soul has to come out the next day and walk that back. So nobody really knows what our policy is. And, you know, I think with the potential of China to provide military aid to Russia, you know, that's a big problem. I mean, how do you prove it? You know, do you need a Chinese flag on the bullets? You know, what constitutes that? You know, when at the beginning of the war, the president said if it were a limited incursion, it might be okay. Well, clearly, you know, Putin heard that and thought he had carte blanche. You know, are a couple of shipments of ammunition one thing? You know, is providing you know, something much more significant? You know, the actual red line, nobody knows. And so, you know, as I said, I think Xi has clearly sized the situation up and concluded that Biden's not going to do anything, at which point the rhetoric just becomes harmful.
And also, too, he said, we're not going to provide tanks. If you provide tanks, that's called World War III. Well, we're providing tanks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's it has been the issue that that I've had with this all along, is there just doesn't seem to be a strategy or any kind of limitation or guidelines to what we're doing. And we've never done anything like this before in terms of support to a war that we are not party to. And so what that looks like is a complete mystery. And I think as you start to see support for the war decline among the American people, it's not folks saying, oh, suddenly we love Vladimir Putin or we want Ukraine to become part of the Soviet Union again. You know, not at all. What I think folks with questions have are they want to know, you know, what is the point to this? You know, and our president at Heritage, Kevin Roberts, had a piece in Time yesterday just saying we have to be really serious about this because, you know, this is essentially a European war. And if there is conflict in the Pacific, Europe is not a Pacific power. It will assume the United States is taking the lead in the Pacific theater. If we are also leading on Ukraine, that's going to be a problem and a real strain. And so, you know, I would really hope that our large European allies, you know, notably Germany and France, would find a way to do a lot more for Ukraine if they're expecting us to be lead on China.
Before I let you go, you are speaking on a panel, a very exciting panel tomorrow as part of the America First Policy Initiative. It is Preserving Peace in the Middle East. You are a featured panelist on that symposium, which is tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. And people can watch it at AmericaFirstPolicy.com. Can you give us a little bit of a preview of what you're going to be talking about?
Yeah, it's a very interesting event. And Brooke Rollins, who's an old colleague of my husband's, actually is doing a really great job leading the America First Policy Institute and institutionalizing a lot of the things that President Trump got so very right, one of which is peace in the Middle East. And so, you know, that's what we'll be focusing on. We have Senator Lankford, we have Congresswoman Claudia Tenney. So Senator from Oklahoma, Congresswoman from New York, myself, my former colleague, Rob Greenway, who's now at Hudson. And so all people who participated in the Abraham Accords, the deals between UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, and Israel. And, you know, I think we'll have a lot to reflect on, given that just whenever it was, week before last, we had the announcement that China had brokered a peace deal on Yemen between Saudi Arabia and Iran, which is sort of the mirror opposite of what we did. And I think the need for the United States to be the lead player in negotiating productive deals to provide greater peace and stability in the Middle East is just painfully apparent at this point.
The Abraham Accords, I think, were one of the greatest initiatives in the Trump administration. I know you work closely with Jared Kushner on that, and Avi as well. So Avi Berkowitz. So thank you for your work on that. We'll be tuning in to watch the panel.
There is only one Avi.
There is only one Avi. That's very, very true. True indeed. Dr. Victoria Coates, former director, national security advisor, senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation's Thatcher Center for Peace. And of course, Philadelphia's own. Thanks, Doc. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Rich. Take care.
Rich Zeoli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7. Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.